This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two, Sharp Money from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. We're just hanging out. It's the eve of July 4th, America's birthday. A lot happening with us on the show here. We'll talk some more NBA free agency takeaways as well as the Major League Baseball card. As I'm Ben Wilson, joined by Adam Burke here on the desk. Robbie Kylan joining us here in 15 minutes to talk all things NBA. We'll get into some of our free agent winners and losers, Adam. A couple Wimbledon matches still going, which I'm very locked in on. What has been a very entertaining Yannick Sinner, Matteo Berrettini match. 7-6, 7-6 so far to Sinner. And Berrettini just got a break. You should be invested in this, Adam, because one of Zach Cohen, one of our main tennis bettors here at the network, one of his best bets today, Berrettini plus 2.5 sets. And Berrettini has been up a break two different times and has been in two different tie breaks, yet has been unable to get a set off the number one seed.
Ben, has there been any, like, shocking, you know, things that happened so far in Wimbledon and shocking results, or is it kind of just playing as it should be?
There's been some stuff. I mean, Casper Ruud, now I wouldn't say people who follow this stuff closely would say it was shocking that he lost, because Casper Ruud is notoriously terrible on grass. But he did lose to Fabio Fognini today, the veteran Italian, who was a 4-1 underdog. It's pretty significant when that happens. I would say the biggest so far, Andre Rublev lost to a up-and-coming, a very, very unheard-of Argentinian yesterday as a giant favorite in round one. But so far, in women's side, not a ton of huge upsets. Biggest upset today, I have my betting sheet here, was plus 220. Lin Zhu over Anastasia Pavluchenkova. Some short dogs did get there today. But, yeah, nothing too insane so far. Outside of the Rublev and Ruud upsets on the men's side, it has been, for the most part, shock. The other one was Marketa Vondrousova, last year's champion. First defending champ since 94 to go out in the first round. But should be noted, her form had really dipped, Wyatt. She had not been close to the player she was last July when she made her run. So while that was shocking in its own right, it wasn't like, oh, this is some Serena losing to Roberta Vinci at the 2015 U.S. Open. Shocking.
I got another question for you, because you are, we would say, the tennis athlete here at VSiN, and I don't really follow tennis all that much. What makes it so difficult that players struggle on different surfaces? You know, like you just said, was it Casper Ruud struggles with grass?
Right.
We were like, Swiatek is really good on clay. Like, what makes surface is so challenging for some people?
Yeah, and Ruud, a very good clay quarter too. It's part the texture and what that does to the speed of the tennis ball. Very simply put, grass, you see big servers tend to have a lot of success because grass, it's a slick surface. The ball, it just jumps off the surface. It goes so fast. And as a result, you see quicker points. You see net play placed a premium on as far as grass court tennis goes. It takes a very different mindset and a different type of style to be successful as a grass court tennis player. Clay, the ball gets slowed down by the clay. It's just the texture, how it holds up the ball. So you need to be a lot more crafty. A finesse are words often thrown out. Angles come into play so much more in clay court tennis. And you don't need to be a big bomber. Most guys who are serve bots, as we call them, especially on the men's tour, struggle on clay because their biggest weapon is naturally neutralized by the surface. And that's why the best all-around players tend to have their games travel pretty well surface to surface. Hard courts are created differently, even though, you know, it's just a hard court. Different hard courts have different, you know, different surfacing, and balls have different speeds on them. So it's very unique. It's kind of like, you know, it's not as crazy as, say, like handicapping different park factors. But in a sense, Adam, you could make a case. It's like, you know, going from Coors to the Trop, you know, in some instances. It's not obviously apples to apples on that comparison, but that's sort of, in a nutshell, why you see players tend to struggle on certain surfaces versus the others.
Or it's like the Royals from home and away.
Yeah, well, and then, of course, I bet on the Royals yesterday, and they don't do anything. Is all that generally accounted for, not only in the futures market, but also in like, the single-match betting?
I'd say single-match betting, yes, for the most part, but where it gets weird in futures is you do get the best players that I would say get the benefit of the doubt, even if they're not traditionally very good on specific surfaces. And while, yes, Daniil Medvedev, terrible on clay. He openly admits he's like, I'm never going to win on clay. His odds might get priced a little bit longer than, say, your Aussie Open or your Wimbledon for him or U.S. Open for Medvedev. But he's still going to be pretty short, like, because Medvedev is one of the top seeds. Casper Ruud was still pretty high on the odds board, even though most people who follow this stuff know all right, he's not to be taken seriously on grass. You just don't bet him. So there is somewhat of an adjustment. I would say books, because a lot of this stuff happens to the top players, are still not one to say, all right, well, let me just give a fair price on Rude, which should be, you know, say, like a 50-1 instead of a 20-1, which is where you'll find him priced, or even shorter than that in some of these other tournaments. That would be kind of an example of how it is sort of thrown off, but it's not where you can really take advantage as a bettor, because it's in those markets where it's more futures-based. That's how I would describe that. And it's why Matteo Berrettini, who's been completely out of form, injured, he is a threat at Wimbledon simply because of his serve and volley game. I mean, he's an absolute stud when he is getting serves in. That's why I'm not surprised that he's pushed Jannik Sinner, world number one, top seed here, to a very tight match. It's been tie breaks each of the first two sets, and Berrettini has been able to control most of his service games as a result of that.
Sounds like that's what Zach wrote about and why he likes Berrettini in this
Zach
match.
Cohen wrote about. We wish Zach well on his Berrettini plus 2.5 sets.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, you know, we talk about the NFL betting guide. We talk about the reasons to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Like, we know, we're fully aware a lot of places are covering college football in the NFL. But, you know, we've really put an emphasis on covering tennis, largely because we have Zach. And also, I mean, Gil Alexander is also a very, very sharp tennis mind as well, and so are you. I don't know, I may be hitting you up to start writing things for us over at VSiN.com. The more the merrier. But
my DMs are open. You have my number.
I will slide into your text. I will not slide into your DMs.
But I appreciate that.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's why we cover so many things over at VSiN.com. And Zach's tennis write-ups are truly tremendous. And actually, you know, kind of makes me wonder, like, in terms of looking at our traffic numbers, because, again, I am the managing editor over there, so I kind of keep track of all of that. And, you know, things that we see are working really well for us, we try to do more of. Maybe tennis betting seems like it's growing a little bit. Now, obviously, Wimbledon is a bit of an outlier, but Zach has also had really good traffic numbers on the events leading up to Wimbledon. So it seems like people are kind of, you know, getting involved in some more of these markets where there are probably more, you know, betting options available because the sportsbooks are seeing the demand increase.
And there is set betting. There's game spread betting. Totals, there's a lot of different markets that you can look at. As far as the biggest upset so far was Francisco Comisana, the young Argentinian who took out Andre Rublev in four sets. He was 14-1 at Circa. That's your biggest upset in a single match so far. While on the women's side, Marketa Vondrousova, the defending champ, first defending champ to lose since 94, loses to Jessica Buzas Manero plus 540 at Circa. So there are big upsets to be had. And I think a lot of times the way we look and bet these things, if we, you know, we're not going to be throwing, you know, quarter of a unit on some of these big dogs. But what we will do is look, if we think they can keep it competitive, and we see an edge there, that's where the spread betting on the total games or the sets comes in play, especially on the men's side where it is best 3 out of 5 tennis, and it is more likely that you'll see the better player win because it's a longer sample size. That's where the different options we have as bettors is really, really beneficial when it comes to the tennis, and you're not stuck just like the old school way of betting was just, all right, throw a bunch of favorites in parlays that you trust, get it to a palatable number, and then bet it that way. A
couple things. One, love your execution on all these tennis names, spot on.
We're play by play. You know why we know.
Well, you're. This is where I say you're a little bit better than me because there's some names that you know when you see it the first time you're like, all right, this is how I think it's said, and then somebody tells me it, I can't get the second one to overcome the. I'll always go back to when I originally saw the name. But you talked about, you know, tennis growing, you know, betting and whatnot with all the different options. That's how I feel with NASCAR. You know, I mean, you talk about a niche sport.
Sure.
I love at NASCAR, Will Hill, Caesars, they have a bunch of different options, you know, not just race winner, but you can go top three, top five, pick the order, top 10, groups, and all these different stuff. It's really cool to see all the different betting options and different ways I can attack a race and feel like my bets are always going to be good until that final caution comes out and then I lose out
all
of them.
You know what, too? I think along those same lines, and this is, I mean, I don't follow NASCAR closely or tennis for that matter, but the way that I kind of think about it is like Scottie Scheffler in golf, right? I feel like in tennis, it's like, well, was Rafael Nadal going to win or Novak Djokovic or like, you know, there wasn't really a whole lot of parity. And in NASCAR, there wasn't a whole lot of parity for a while there too. But now it's like in every NASCAR race, there's a legitimate question as to who is going to win this.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys, you know, have, you know, there's a lot more top five finishers than there had been in the past, stuff like that. So I think just the fact that there's more parity in both tennis and NASCAR have created more demand for betting because it's more interesting
sure.
now.
Well, as the big three became, with Roger Federer's retirement, the big two, right. And now Rafael Nadal is probably not going to ever be a factor anymore. How many tournaments will he even play is up for debate. Novak Djokovic is hanging on the last couple of years. And then since on the women's side, ever since Serena Williams' retirement. I mean, you is outside of Iga Swiatek at the French Open, where she has been the queen of clay and has been an unstoppable force there, you're right. It's been much more so wide open, and I can speak to that too on the NASCAR side. Where so I feel like every week it's something chaotic that happens. So I don't know how you find the needle in the haystack there.
The last race at Nashville, it was it took about an hour just to run three official laps because in NASCAR overtime it's an unlimited amount, and everybody kept running out of gas, running into each other. There was a guy, Zane Smith, finished second. His highest finish throughout the year was 13th at Daytona, where usually everybody has a good chance of winning. I would say his top five or even top three odds had to been, well over 50-1 or whatnot, just because this is a driver that is finishing, on average 25th to 35th.
Who was the guy that won the road race last year in Chicago?
Shane Van Gisbergen, which they are going back to Chicago this week.
Wasn't Van Gisbergen like the last driver on the odds board, or it was something crazy?
So it was his first career race. He was kind of middle pack.
Okay.
And then he qualified really well and then shot up the boards.
I remember he going into the race week, he was just a massive dog.
Yes.
Shane Van Gisbergen, Wyatt's favorite driver.
I did not bet him that
week. Oh, you didn't bet him.
I wish I did.
Alas. What are you going to do? Great discussion on some of the niche sports that maybe shouldn't be niche sports. Maybe we should bet more often on them. I certainly would like tennis to be the mainstream. When we come back, though, we will talk about one of our big-time sports. It is the NBA. Get Robbie Kienland's reaction to NBA free agency. Which teams improved themselves? Which teams stood pat? We'll get Robbie's take when we return here on VSiN.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out now, there's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And for a limited time, we've got an unbeatable offer for you. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at just $199 when you use promo code SHARP. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. It's normally $240 a year, but right now we're offering 13 months of VSiN Pro access for $199. And you get everything we do, including daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Promo code SHARP gets you 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 and instant access to our all-new NFL betting guide. As we're back on Sharp Money, I'm Ben Wilson. Adam Burke, VSiN Managing Editor, is here. You were looking up deep dive facts on Shane Van Gisbergen in our last segment that we all thought we would definitely have a reference of today on the show, but
I am multitasking.
You're multitasking.
I am putting up our Grant Park 165 NASCAR article for this week at the Chicago Street Course.
Just found out that it was called the Grant Park 165.
There you go.
There we go.
The more you know.
NASCAR expert here now just finding out the name of the street race.
Hey, at least I knew what city they were
you
in.
You did know it was in Chicago.
Yeah.
Granted. That is okay. Well, Adam does that. We want to get guy Robbie Kienland back on the show here to talk some NBA because it has been a big smorgasbord of free agency news here. Now that the dust has settled, some odds are starting to shift as we go out to our progressive guest line. Welcome him in. You can give him a follow at our Kienland, K-A-L-L-A-N-D, as he's the senior writer, deputy editor there at UpRock Sports. Great to see you, man. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's start in the East here, where the first big move was Paul George going to Philadelphia here. A lot of differing thoughts, I would say, on George. Some people have started to sour on him as he's gotten later on in his career. What do you make, though, of that move here and thinking about where Philadelphia goes now? As they have to be all in for Joel Embiid, was this the right decision for them, though, to make?
I think it was because I don't think there was another really good option out there. I think if you look at the landscape of wings that were available, it was like if they didn't get Paul George, you were talking about, do they start chasing Brandon Ingram? Do they try to figure out a stopgap until they could go after somebody else? But this was the only year they were going to have money if Jimmy Butler wasn't going to be available, and that fit wasn't exactly perfect either. George made the most sense. They had to give him the 4 years, and if you're trying to maximize the window now, this is the move you make. I understand why people are a little skeptical of it. Paul George is a different player on paper than he is in actuality, especially in the postseason. But you do see how it should work. And it should work better than Tobias Harris. It should work better than what they've had. And this should be the best trio they've had, as they've been kind of hell-bent on building a big three around Joel Embiid for a while now, dating back to the Ben Simmons years. And now it seems, I think they have their best trio. The real question is, can they build out the rest of the roster? Because right now it is very thin, and they're only going to really be able to work on the margins.
Robbie, when you look at the odds here for the Eastern Conference, Boston plus 150, Philadelphia 4-1, the Knicks plus 450, the Bucks 6-1, both Bucks fans next to me here. How much does the Paul George thing close the gap for you with the Sixers and the Celtics? And, I mean, Boston's under 3-1 to win the NBA title and run it back.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the issue that Philly has is it closes the gap some, but Boston is, we know they are 7-8 playoff rotation deep. They know exactly what they're going to put out there. And Philly, like, how many guys on this roster do you trust? Like, they're probably going to need Eric Gordon to be good. The way this roster is shaking out, like, Kelly Oubre was really nice for them last year. I like bringing him back. But, like, how much do you want to have to rely on him? I think it closes the gap some. It gives them a puncher's chance. And it gives them a chance if Boston is banged up. If Kristaps is out again next year, you know, if he's hurt, that's a bigger concern. Al Horford, another year older. If one of their main guys is out, like, that's kind of where you're at if you're Philly, is you're kind of hoping that you get to that point and the playoff toll takes, you know, the playoff run that Boston's been on, the years that they've played so deep, takes its toll. But I don't think they are the top contender right now to Boston supremacy.
And what makes it fascinating, too, with the way the full NBA title odds are, Boston's one, Philly is actually two, because of how the West is viewed as this an absolute juggernaut, behemoth of teams you have to scratch and claw your way to get through. So the odds are actually favorable for any of these Eastern Conference teams, where it is sort of viewed as, okay, if not Boston, then who? Where do you stand if it is not Philadelphia, the next top contender here? Knicks, Bucks, next on the odds board here. One of those two teams has done a lot. The other has really done nothing, although I think Wyatt would agree with me, is former Wisconsin Milwaukee resident here. I would tell you, the way the cap situation was, I don't know why anybody was expecting Milwaukee to do much. The way their team was already constructed going into the year, whether you want to hear that or whether you don't, that's kind of the reality. But how do you power right now where the Knicks and Bucks are at when it has been so totally different, diverging off seasons for each of them so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the, like, really for me, I put those three teams pretty equal footing. I'd probably put the Knicks at two. I think we're maybe underestimating how good they were with OG and Anobi last year. If he's healthy, you add Mikhail, you add Julius Randle, who I'm a Julius Randle skeptic when it comes to the playoffs. However, at this point, that's mitigated to a pretty large degree because you don't need him to be some fantastic 1A or 1B at this point. If they can just get him some shots in rhythm, get him in his spots, like, he does add a dynamism to that offense that they lack. I would put the Knicks too. I think the Bucks and Sixers are basically the same tier for me, in the sense that I get why Philly would be seen as better, but I think that the Bucks, if healthy, if that trio is healthy and they can get something, they need to move the Bobby Portis, Pat Connaughton, Brook Lopez, like, something's got to change a little bit to get a little bit more out of that. But I think we're kind of underestimating how good that group can be, because they were banged up and they kind of became the forgotten group in the East because all these other teams showed something in the playoffs and Milwaukee just fell flat because they were banged up and it just wasn't coming together. I think Milwaukee and Philly would be kind of T3 for me in the East.
To Ben's point, as we take a look at the Western Conference odds here, Thunder 4-1, Nuggets 4-1, Mavericks plus 475, Timberwolves 5-1, these coming from DraftKings, then the Lakers all the way out at 14-1. Robbie, has anything happened in the Western Conference in free agency that moves the needle for you one way or another on any of these teams?
I think OKC's done a great job. And really, for me, it is a combination of OKC shoring up two weaknesses. You upgrade from Josh Giddey, you bring in Alex Caruso. That is an upgrade. That is especially an upgrade in the 16-game season in terms of a guy you can trust to put out there to do what you need and not be played off the floor. Then you add Isaiah Hartenstein, who fills the biggest gap that they had on their roster, which was they just got crushed on the glass. We watched that Dallas series, and they just got destroyed on the boards, had nobody that could physically handle size inside, and we know how big the West is. Hartenstein fills that gap, gives them a lot more kind of diversity in the lineups they can run. You can still run Chet at the five some. You can still play Jalen Williams some, but you just have a lot more diversity. I think that, coupled with the fact that none of the top teams, other than Dallas, I like Najee Marshall, Clay, we'll see. That's a really intriguing addition, but like that's not guaranteed to be a home run or anything at this point in his career. I don't think any of the other top teams of the West did anything. Denver got worse. Minnesota, I think, has gotten a little worse. Losing Monty Morris is sneaky and like not good for them. They were terrible at backup point guard last year. He played some fairly important minutes for them in the playoffs to spell Mike Conley, those games where Mike Conley was out. I don't know who they turned to there. Is Rob Dillingham ready to do that in year one? That's a lot to put on his shoulders. I think Minnesota got a little worse. Denver definitely got worse. And nobody else has really taken the big leap around them. I actually feel pretty good about OKC as to me, the fairly comfortable favorite in the West, even understanding Denver, Minnesota, they're all there, but I think they all took little steps back.
And the reality too of the West, Robbie, there's going to be what, 11, 12 teams who think they can be competitive fighting for a fewer than that available spots. Eight ultimately will get into the postseason. We don't have win totals out yet, but what's a team in that mix that you see taking a step back or a backseat this year and most likely coming up short of expectations?
I mean, Sacramento has once again decided to run it back, and I don't get it. They, you know, they were everybody, you know, we heard all this noise, like they're going after Kuzma, they're going after Ingram, they're going after Lowry, and now it's all cooled off, and it looks like we're just running it back again in Sacramento. I think their team takes a step back. The Lakers are just the same team again. Like, they're going to be a play-in team again, it seems like. I think those are the two that feel kind of odd man out. And then Houston still hasn't done anything either. I don't think they're going to take some leap next year either. So I think those are three teams that are going to be kind of on that 9-10 fringe range that are probably in trouble with missing out on the playoffs with expectations to get in.
Now we just wait. Win totals to come out. We get Summer League total degen betting here the next couple of weeks. Always great to have Robbie Kylan on with us here on Sharp Money. Thanks so much for the insights, man. Be well.
Yep, thanks for having me.
You give Robbie a follow at RKALLAND, senior writer, deputy editor at Up Rocks Sports. When we come back, we'll go back into the NFL and talk about a division near and dear to all of our hearts, the NFC North. That's on the other side.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you go to our homepage, VSiN.com, right now, you will see all sorts of exclusive articles, betting splits, best bets, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Like Adam Burke, our VSiN managing editor. MLB best bets for the slate today. Every team in action ahead of the July 4th holiday tomorrow. And there is a picture of Yordan Alvarez and Jose Altuve celebrating on the front part of your article, Adam. I wonder, are you betting the Astros game today as a result?
You have to read the article or wait until the next hour to find out.
Wait until the next hour. We will talk through all of the Major League Baseball slate today here. Patrons around us are getting excited, or they're about to cash Sigma Derby, the OG Sigma Derby here at Bar Canada at the Deep. I love the way you...
We should discuss this because we talked about it yesterday, Matt and I. It's like the favorites winning like one out of every three races, like at a minimum, right?
That's a great pain.
So, like, how much of those people, like, how much are they actually winning? Like, they're having a great time. And it's a really good way to get cheap drinks if you get a cocktail waitress over there.
25 like, cents a game.
Yeah.
I always thought the optimal strategy was you just bet on the longest shots every time. And you basically do a combination of, like, the third to fourth longest odds and the long shot. And when you do the exact, you're getting, like, 90 to 100 to 1.
So this is your betting system for Sigma Derby?
I don't know. I've been told.
We got to get Tyler back here to model Sigma Derby, and let's see what happens.
I don't know. I think Adam's got a good point. Like, really is for the drinks because I'm just putting a dollar in. You know, I'm getting a drink that, you know.
If that.
Is valued at $8, but it's probably sold to me for like $16.
I mean, you could bet a quarter a race if you really wanted to, right?
Yeah.
Adam, you asked who I have feuds with. I'll add one to the list. I was verbally reprimanded in early 2000 for attempting to bet this a Sigma Derby race at the what was then the Hilton. It's now the Westgate. And I was accosted by a plump security guard. I was 7 years old at the time.
This guy, 24 years ago.
Really? Do that? Okay.
So there's there's two people in Ben Wilson's life that have had beef with him.
My mistake was
24 years
and it
ago.
It was him visiting Las Vegas before he actually moved to Las Vegas.
My mistake was that I cheered a little bit too vociferously. Like, my dad let me put the money in, and he's like, just watch the horse. But once the horses start, I mean, you can't just sit there.
I mean, you were seven.
Hold
up. So
my dad was trying to play blackjack, and he was trying to give me something to do while he was playing blackjack.
So this is the
so
thing,
right? So he let me just wander around the
You know, we're at the age now, at least I know I am, where you can talk about things, it was a different time, right? Oh, it was a different era. So my sister worked for Continental Airlines. She was a gate agent in Cleveland.
Continental Airlines.
So, yes, now they merged with United, right? United bought them. And then, well, anyway, so my mom flew for free in my childhood, and I was on what was called a buddy pass. It was like $100 round trip anywhere in the country, anywhere that, like, Continental flew domestic, right? So I was in Vegas a lot. As a kid, a lot. Spent a lot of nights staying at Circus because my mom liked to come out here and play penny slots. We didn't have casinos in Ohio at the time. So, like, she'd give me, like, $20 and send me upstairs to the Midway. And for those who know Circus, there's still to this day a rotating slot platform where, like, I could look down and see her, but she had absolutely no idea where I was.
Always a good strategy.
I'm lucky I never got kidnapped in the late 90s. It was a different time.
It was a different time.
So that was my, you know, ages 7, 8, 9, 10 years in Vegas.
Great.
You're playing Sigma Derby, and I'm winning stuffed animals.
To each his own. And you were flying for free.
We were raised differently, I guess.
I was just going to the old school Wet n Wild that was located next to the Sahara, and I think right across from Westgate.
We had Geauga Lake in Ohio, and, of course, Cedar Point, but especially Geauga Lake.
Wow. I'm learning a lot about both of you. This is great. I think we should open up memories of Vegas past.
I mean, it's either that or hear Dustin talk about, like, relationships and his therapist when he's usually on. So
right. That is fair.
We can cover the off-topic stuff
I get
here
that a
in
lot
honor
on
of
the
Dustin.
Live Bet Sunday with Dustin where I have to think about myself intrinsically more so than at any other time during the week whenever I'm on with Dustin. That's all a fair point. You ready to talk some NFC North football?
I guess so.
Speaking of relationships.
I pride myself on the transition, and I had nothing. I was like, I had nothing.
There was nowhere to go
with
that.
From Sigma Derby to the Packers.
I had something that we could have done for the – it's all right. We'll save
relationships,
it for another time.
Okay, I like it. Adam, you wrote up the NFC North.
I did.
For
yes.
the betting guide. We will begin our breakdown now with the teams at the top of the odds board, move our way down the division here over the next couple of segments. As far as the Lions go, who are top of your odds board here, it's a weird team because I feel like so often when you get a team like Detroit that is so heavily hyped into one preseason and then they live up to it like the Lions did in the 2023 season, there's always that natural inclination for bettors to say, okay, this is the NFL. It is really hard to sustain success. Where there's hype, there's usually bluster and there's not much to back it up. But because the Lions did the previously unthinkable and keep their offensive coordinator Ben Johnson, keep basically all the pieces in place that led them to the NFC Championship game last year, I don't really feel like that's the general direction the market is going on them. Still a win total of 10.5, favorites to win the division at +150. How do you see Detroit in a year where there are pieces in place for them to duplicate the success they had last year, but it's obviously a very difficult thing to do in the NFL?
It is, but, I mean, there's so much continuity here on this team. And also, I think there are a lot of really big positives for them. Specifically, they have to score a lot of points, right? I mean, their defense was really not all that great last year. They were actually top by Pro Football Reference in terms of pressure percentage, but tied for 23rd in sacks. So they kind of left their defensive backs on an island a little bit, playing some one-on-one, stuff like that. And they were 21st, in EPA per play, and were not good against the pass. So they have to score a lot of points, right? That's kind of their MO. They have to outscore teams to win, which, yes, I realize you always have to outscore a team to win. But in this case, 34-31, 34-28, you know, 31-24, stuff like that. They play 14 of their 17 games inside this season. So their road schedule is actually very, very promising. They play one game, December 22nd, at Soldier Field, that looks really compromised from a weather standpoint. So Jared Goff running it back with Ben Johnson for the third year. They're very dynamic at the skill positions. Plus, he gets another year of Jahmyr Gibbs and a year of Jameson Williams, not to mention all the other weapons that they have in place. I like this Lions team a lot. I think Jared Goff at 40-1 to win MVP is a very interesting bet as well. I think this is the team that should win the NFC North, and I realize that there's a case to be made for Green Bay with Jordan Love. There's a case to be made with Caleb Williams in Chicago and, you know, getting Montez Sweat last year. And maybe the Vikings will be better than people think. But I think the Lions are the top dog here, or the top cat, so to speak, in this division.
I just wonder on the defensive side. A, what you talk about is all very valid. It also, though, creates a situation where the offense has less margin for error. That's just the natural, you know, point of when your defense struggles. And Aaron Glenn is back for another year at D.C. 25th against the pass on the EPA per play basis. And that's why we always see this. You know, I like to look at both how teams do against the run and the pass. But in today's NFL, I mean, look at Detroit. This is a great example. Fourth against the run. They were actually a pretty good run defense, but nobody ever ran against them.
Right.
That's why they were so good against the run, because they knew you could bludgeon them through the air, and that's how the NFL operates anyway. Fourth against the run, 25th against the pass, 21st overall. In a similar vein to when Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes were on the rise, and so much was talked about of, okay, if Steve Spagnuolo could just get that defense to be mediocre, they will take the next step. Is it the same thing with Detroit, Adam?
You know, I think so. I think it's a possibility. There are a couple of things that are a little bit concerning about Detroit, though, why I haven't really invested in their season win total, even though, you know, as I mentioned, I do like Goff to win MVP. They have the dreaded early bye. They have the week 5 bye week. That's always a concern. But the other thing is, you know, as mentioned, their pass defense is not spectacular, and now all of a sudden you run into a situation in this division where you're getting Jordan Love twice, and obviously Jordan Love had a big-time breakout season last year. Caleb Williams, you know, seems like the Bears are going to have an improved offense. May not be great, but it'll at least be improved, to be sure. And then Minnesota, you know, I mean, I don't know how long they go with Sam Darnold, but Kevin O'Connell is a really, really brilliant mind when it comes to quarterback development, or at least, you know, knowing how to run an offense. So I think it's going to be really intriguing to see what happens with this Vikings team. And that's the tough thing for the Lions. They're going to face arguably three improved offenses within their own division.
That's why I like where your head was at making a Jared Goff MVP bet, because you're taking the defense out of it. Now you still have to have team success to a
right
degree, but it's also looking at, A, the positive side of the variance level on Goff and having the continuity there with the Ben Johnson, and then, B, if Detroit is still right around its win total, but you have just insane video game type numbers, and you are getting all those games indoors. I see where it all adds
He's
up.
He's got to keep throwing, right? Because they're going to have to keep scoring. So I think that's a really big positive there. And maybe it's not an MVP if you're a little bit worried about that. Maybe you just play the overs on the season-long props, because he's going to have a big year if they're going to reach the goals and expectations that they have.
Other alternative way to bet that. As much as I'm usually not a bet overs on season-long props, because there are so many ways those can go unders,
right,
this would be one of the few examples where, yeah, actually probably the better play, always assuming health, and that's the big caveat, is to look over on that.
8-1, most passing yards?
8-1. It's not a bad number. Who is the favorite there?
Mahomes, 5-1. Stroud, 6. Prescott, 650.
Have we created another feud?
Ben, what happened here?
Reggie Edwards.
What did you do to Reggie?
I don't know.
Nicest guy here.
3 exclamation points.
That's harsh.
How do the Packers stack up? We'll discuss. And I feel really bad what I did to Reggie. We'll talk about that next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSIN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, and best futures bets from all the VSIN experts, including on MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit vsin.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. Back on Sharp Money, we've commandeered the sign seen across Bar Canada by our Reggie Edwards, who might have been egged on by Sean and Larry. back in our control room.
That's
just a hunch.
I gotta say, I think it was especially difficult to see him do that in front of something as whimsical as Sigma Derby.
Yeah.
Right? People just over there having fun, carefree.
Because Reggie was definitely out there for like 2 minutes getting all set up, and nobody looked over. They were just watching the horses.
Yeah, they were locked in. I found this. I mean, I just, you know, just so people can see. Now we'll put it off to the side. That took like the whole segment to get set up. Alas. You ready for some NBA breaking news, Wyatt Tomchek?
Huh?
Does it involve the Bucks?
In a way, from the past, Joe Ingles, Timberwolves, 1 year deal.
Ah.
Your thoughts?
I like Joe Ingles, man. He's a scrappy guy, good 3-point shooter. He had a really, I mean.
He was never healthy with the
ball. I know, with the Bucks, yeah. That always stunk.
How about this? Alec Burks to the Miami Heat, 1 year deal.
Okay. Okay. But when.
Odds have changed, by the way.
Joe Ingles with when he was on the Jazz, that Jazz team was fun. I think that was kind of, if you look back 5 years, like kind of the what ifs is that core. I felt that they had a really good chance of at least making it to the NBA Finals.
Fortunately, not the same since his ACL injury. But I had high hopes for Ingles, and he came back probably too soon, wouldn't you say, for Milwaukee? Came back and just had no hop in the step, unfortunately.
I know we're supposed to talk NFC North. Robbie Callen did mention it about with the Bucks. The one player that I think I was really, and I love him to death, but really disappointed in his playoff performance and just kind of see what his future is Pat Connaughton. I don't think he was able to really hit the threes at a consistent pace that Milwaukee needed, and that we saw in years past.
Last time the Bucks had a guy struggle to perform in the playoffs, he went to Boston and became one of the best players on the floor, Drew Holiday.
Portland first, then Portland gave him to Boston. The Bucks didn't give him to Boston.
It kind of felt like they did, because it was always inevitable he was not going to stay in Portland. But that's neither here nor there. We will talk another team based in the state of Wisconsin. That is the Green Bay Packers. Between the Detroit Lions and the Packers, those two teams, your most popular selections this year, to come out of the NFC North, Packers are second on the odds board. Adam Burke, I will let you start here because of how so many people have different opinions, not only on Jordan Love at quarterback, but you know where this team will go after choking away a divisional round game to the Niners last postseason. Where do you look at the Packers from your 10,000-foot perspective here as we start 24?
Yeah, you know, I don't really have super strong opinions about the Packers, if we're being honest. I mean, you know, I think Josh Jacobs is kind of an interesting guy to bring into the fold. You know, I don't know how much is actually left there in terms of tread on the tires, but, you know, Aaron Jones goes to the rival Vikings, and, you know, Green Bay still had a top-10 rush attack by EPA per play last season, and this was also a top-5 passing attack. So the offense was really, really good. There are a lot of things to like, a lot of things to build on. Defensively, just mediocre at best. Didn't really force a lot of takeaways. 23rd in EPA per play against. They were, you know, similarly below average against both the pass and the run. Jeff Hafley's an interesting hire, though. So Jeff Hafley, a guy who was at Ohio State, was the head coach at Boston College. You know, we're kind of seeing this, and I think this is a really good thing, right? We're seeing a lot of breaths of fresh air now in terms of coordinator and coaching hires in the NFL with guys that do things a little bit differently, can maybe bring in some different schemes, maybe a little bit relatable to players because they're a little bit younger in age, stuff like that. So I'm pretty interested in seeing that, especially because Hafley's a guy who his bread is buttered in the secondary. That's where he was a secondary coach for a long time. It was an area of emphasis as a DC. Out of 11 draft picks, the Packers took 7 guys who will play in the back 7. So that's the area that they're looking to improve, and I'll be curious to see if they do it.
It's always easy and I think dangerous to look at the new thing coming in because we have no evidence of it going poorly, right? So I'll admit to being as guilty of this as anybody, where you get the new shiny object, whether it's a player or whether it's a coach. And Hafley, who has a very, you say, interesting, I think that's a good word to describe it, because he, you know, coaches it. You know, BC, not a team exactly known for its, you know, recruiting prowess. And yet he, all by all accounts, really, really good job at the college level. Now he comes to Green Bay. As much as I want to avoid saying, okay, well, this is the missing piece here for a defense that was bottom 10 against both the run and the pass last year, and a defense that has perennially, you go back 2 decades, ever since Fritz Schirmer retired, outside of a couple Dom Capers seasons, it was the defense that always kept Green Bay of ascending to the potential level, whether it was Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and now Jordan Love, you can qualify with what happened last year. So I'm hesitant to say, okay, Hafley will be the answer, but I compare Green Bay to Detroit like this, Adam. I had them a point and a half separate in my final season end power ratings, which is you have Green Bay as a result slightly above the market because just look at the playoff lines. Green Bay was a 10.5 point dog in San Francisco. Lions the next week were 7.5 point dogs. Market generally had the Lions about 3 points better than Green Bay. I had it more like a point and a half. What did Detroit really do on defense this year over the offseason to bolster that core? Not much. It was a lot of small additions. You keep Aaron Glenn as DC. I'm not all that high on what Detroit's personnel will look like from a defensive perspective this year. Whereas Green Bay took the big swing. You mentioned all the draft picks. You bring in a new DC as well. You only expect more growth from Jordan Love at quarterback. That's why, to me, the ceiling, if they figure this out and get it right, I expect it to take some time, similar to how the Packers started slow last year. But if that is figured out and you see the defense play at a much higher level, which I certainly believe it is capable of, that naturally believes me to think that the Packers have the ability to take over Detroit in that division, just purely based on the roster positions, the amount of depth they have personnel-wise. It's just a matter of can you get the coaching and the scheme right, and they've never been able to say that really over the last decade on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, and I think the other thing for the Packers here is Love was pretty good last year, you know, in his first year as a starter, and you never knew week to week who was actually going to be healthy enough to play wide receiver. Like, their injury report every single week, you know, somebody was questionable in that wide receiver core. So he almost never really got to play with a full complement of healthy offensive players.
And
so,
the running backs were always
right.
And O-line.
And maybe Jacobs is going to be somebody a little bit stronger. So, you know, even though I leaned under with my pick, I mean, I honestly thought that the win total of 9.5 was pretty dead on. It feels like 9-8, 10-7 is the most likely possibility for this team. So I think the win total number was kind of dead on, kind of leaned a little bit towards the under. But as you're talking through it here, if Halfley is able to upgrade this defense, if they have better health fortunes on the wide receiver side, then I could certainly see myself maybe being a little bit more of a believer in Green Bay, which to that end, right, if I'm a big believer in Detroit and I start coming around on Green Bay as we get closer to the season, right, then almost by default, you have to kind of look at Chicago and say,
yes,
as promising as this looks, this is a team that's probably going to fall short of expectations.
8.5 on the win total, and that is a great way to bring it up. Very rarely do all four teams go over. It almost never happens within their respective divisions. I'll let Wyatt get a say, too, on his thoughts for Green Bay as a resident Wisconsinite here on this show and a very close follower of the NFC North. Wyatt, would you push back to anything I talk about, or you have any different perspective here on what you are looking to see as you break down the pack coming into this year?
Well, I mean, you hit it perfectly about the defense. It's just every year you feel like the defense is going to take a big step. I mean, remember Aaron Rodgers after the Chicago game, the 100th season of the NFL, and he's like, we got a defense now. And it just, we never can get the consistency year in and year out, and really was the run game. You know, Green Bay would have, you talked about how, Detroit was so great against the run because everybody just kept passing against them. For Green Bay, they were so great against the pass because everybody just decided to run against them. So that's going to be the key. Green Bay spent a ton of draft capital on the secondary. I love the acquisition of Xavier McKinney, one of the best safeties in the game. My question is on the offensive side, Ben, is, you know, I like Josh Jacobs. I think getting him back to form, he can be a top running back in this league. But losing Aaron Jones is going to be, in my opinion, a big blow. Because if you look at when Green Bay really started to get things going offensively, how many of those games did Aaron Jones have over 100 yards? He was kind of the safety blanket for Green Bay, not only in the running game, but also was, I think, underrated in the passing game as well.
Could use him both very, very versatile. A lot of people with investments on Green Bay, I think, Wyatt, were frustrated he wasn't even used more in the passing game. That's how good of a player he was. And you like it or not, the contract and the way the team runs things, it's a very unique franchise being publicly owned. I think as frustrating as it was probably always inevitable that they were going to handle Jones's deal the way that they did. As unfortunate as it is to say, as a Mr. Shareholder over here.
I was going to say, as a minority owner of the Green Bay Packers, that was not what we were hoping for with Aaron Jones. So that was voted
against. Where were you to speak up at the meeting, Wyatt? I mean, come on. Make your voice heard.
It was
You're an owner.
It was Mount West Women's Basketball Championship.
Yeah.
That's
get on your private jet that you get as an owner. Go up to Lambeau and make moves happen yourself. That's another hour in the books here on VSiN Sharp Money. When we come back, we'll start breaking down today's Major League Baseball card. We will finish up the rest of our NFC North discussion as well into our final hour here on VSiN.